Hi everyone, my name's Steve Tudor and welcome to The Friday Show. It's a show that used to have this really handsome and charismatic host. He still pops back from time to time. On today's part, we're talking season ticket prices, internationals, a Manchester derby and the business end to the season. And with so many diverse topics to explore, we really need, as guests, people who are versatile. The Phil Nevilles of podding, if you like. So ladies and gentlemen, I give you Howard and Lloyd. Hi Howard, you there?
Yes, I am. Morning.
Morning. How are you?
Thanks for name checking me in the intro. Just a guest today.
Compliment of sorts. You're looking forward to a cityless weekend?
Yes, I absolutely am.
Right, okay.
Work's been absolutely hectic. And the stress of obviously the business end of the season. I'm going to really enjoy a weekend where I don't have to think about City or the title race or have Liverpool fans moaning about a decision in a game or making excuses or anything like that or blah, blah, looking at the running and England two friendlies but against good sides. It's kind of a perfect palate cleanser because it doesn't matter, but I can sit in a pub with a pint and just look up at the screen occasionally and watch it. And yeah, that this is turned out I thought it was really bad time in this break. The March ones tend to be, but now it's arrived. I'm really looking forward to it. It's come at exactly the right time for me. So
good. Well, that's good to know. Lloyd, are you there? You well?
Yeah, I kind of agree personally, but I think it's come at a bad time for City, probably. I think they probably would have preferred to go straight into the Arsenal game. I think playing a game like this after the international break is tough on both teams, but we were beginning to get everyone back. I'm not sure the 2 weeks does us that much good, to be fair.
I'm more important than City, so that's not...
Well, we know that, Howard. We've potted with you long enough. But I'm going to the England-Brazil game, so I am quite looking forward to that.
Any reason? No, it should be a good game, to be fair.
Yeah, it'd be a good game. It was £30 for a ticket, which is
that's not bad.
Pretty reasonable. And it's my mate Charlie's birthday, and he was like, should we go as a group of eight of us? So I was like, that sounds like a good plan to me.
Good stuff.
Lovely. Okay, well, we're going to get, obviously, to England-Brazil very shortly. Before we do, let's just stay with City, because there was a development this week. Further increase in season ticket prices for next season, an average increase of 5%, despite the club announcing record profits. I'm obviously going to come to both of you on this. I'll start with you, Howard. Your thoughts on it as a whole?
Yeah, I was going to do some long rant, and I'm just worn down. I can't even be arsed now, to be honest. So that's probably...
The only question I'll ask before I'll give you the floor, were you surprised at them?
No.
No, okay.
I am surprised at the amount, Simon. So I probably have the second cheapest season ticket price in the ground. So I'm south stand 30, but not quite right at the back. And I moved to that when it opened because I was on the other side of the away fans, and the prices had gone up like £30 repeatedly for seven seasons or something. That I moved out to save money. So now we're getting to the point where I'm going to have to move to another new stand when they build it to save money again. So mine's gone from 455 to 485, which is 6.6% or something. There are people who like pay 800, 900, have gone up £100 or something. So I don't know if everyone's worked out that 5% is the average. Some of them are nearly up 20. I'm surprised. No. Does that make it acceptable? No. Does the excuses are just pitiful for, oh, suck it up, it's still great value, compare it to other stuff. Oh, well, if other people are being ripped off, then that's fine. Maybe we should get our prices up so we're being ripped off as much as well. There's one caveat that needs to be put in. It's like, well, it makes them... I don't know. Let's make a number up. £1.5 million a year. What's the point? Well, it doesn't. Yeah. It makes them £1.5 million a year forever. So the rise from last season, they'll make money now in its second season. So it's cumulative, basically. It's like you drip, 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 drip.
It's still nothing, though, in the great scheme of things for them, is it?
It is still nothing. It's one youth player could have covered all this. And I semi-seriously suggested, don't do the light shows before matches and the Lecky bill will go down by about the same amount. So, I mean, it's pathetic, and it's pathetic that if people can afford it and are fine, that's fine. They don't have to be angry. But to actually attack people who actually raise the fact that this is a disgrace during a cost of living crisis, when inflation is that high, it's not an excuse for them to pass on costs. With record revenues, with £80 million profit, City should not have to pass the costs on to a largely working class fan base. And the bottom line, I always thought, don't be silly, you're being stupid here, but the bottom line is we have the highest percentage, I think, in the Premier League of season ticket holders to capacity. And us legacy fans and season ticket holders, don't make the club as much money as someone who's going to be ripped off for a one-off ticket, will go into the store, will buy lots of stuff and spend about 70, 80, 100 quid every time they go to the match. That's what City now want in the ground. They honestly are looking at numbers, not looking at fans, not caring about them, don't give a shit about fans and experience, however much they do, however many fan groups they have and I've talked to, they don't listen to any of their recommendations or talk to them or do anything. They're looking at their number crunching, they're looking at revenue, they're looking at getting revenues as high as possible, and that's all that matters to the people making decisions like this, and we don't care in that process. So I'll suck it up. I'll still go because it's an integral part of my life, my personal life, the football. And it's not just the match, it's everything around it on the day.
Yeah.
And they know that. They've got us exactly where they want us. But I know people that have stopped going. I know people that sit around me that say, we win one more league, I'm not going anymore. And I talked about this, about changing football and the sanitised nature, and maybe it's the result of the treble that people are just like, well, where do you go from there? It's not all on City, it's all a bit modern football and it all feels a bit stale sometimes. And they just didn't need to do this. I would never expect them to freeze it every single season, but they could have done it once or twice. They could have done something for the fans when they're on their arse, when everything else is getting more expensive. It's not acceptable for them to say, well, we must make some things more expensive as well. They should recognise that and help the fans out and just freeze it for 1 year, 2 years, and cost them £2 or £3 million or something. I'm sorry, it's an utter disgrace. And we as fans are just numbers now and they don't care for us. And, well, what can I say? I know. They do a direct debit. That's one of the best things they've ever done. So it'll be spread. I won't really notice how much difference. It's about £3 a month. But, you know, this week my Sky's gone up again. my energy bills will probably skyrocket again, even though, you know, the cap's gone down. But everything else will go up and up and up. My mobile phone bill. And to have this go up as well from a club that's got record revenues, some of the highest in the world. I wasn't going to have a rant, was I? I was just
going
to. I'm too tired to really tell you what I think, Steve. I mean, hey, it is what it is. No, I'm not surprised in the slightest. Not for one moment did I think they were going to announce that season tickets were frozen. And City aren't the only ones. Obviously, lots of other fan groups are very, very annoyed at what their clubs have done with the prices. And it seems to get earlier every year as well. So, we're getting more and more successful. The other costs are getting higher and higher. I've got 32 quid to watch Newcastle. That wasn't priced right. Now I've got another Champions League game, right? you might have another one after that. I might have a Wembley ticket if I go. And it's a false economy. I've stopped going on the League Cup scheme. I will now take myself off the FA Cup scheme and choose from the matches whether I go or not. So they're losing business because people are dropping off other stuff. So it's a false economy anyway, because people will make cuts elsewhere. They'll spend less money because there'll be, all their money's going into ticket prices. So I don't even the base figures don't make sense to me. So no, I've probably taken up the most of the podcast. I've got to get to Lloyd.
But no,
I'm not happy now.
Okay.
Well, reading between the lines, I think you probably picked that up. Yeah.
Okay. Lloyd, I've got a twofold question for you, both based on what Howard just said there. You spoke for everyone there, Howard. You basically, you know, a lot of people, that'll resonate with a lot of people. So a twofold question, Lloyd. First of all, City are always accused of being tone deaf. It increasingly starts to look like they just don't give a shit. It's not that they're tone deaf, they just don't give a shit. And the second part of the question is, the real impact upon this could be a lot of people turning away from the club, because it feels like this is the straw that's broke the camel's back. I'm seeing people on Twitter who I never thought would ever stop going to City saying, I'm no longer going to City now. I'm kind of done. Do you kind of have that feeling too?
I've thought both of those things for a while, to be honest. It's not like I've just arrived here. They don't give a shit, quite clearly, when it comes to the ticketing policy. I think that's been, for me, that's been obvious for at least 4 or 5 seasons now. And it doesn't feel like the straw that broke the camel's back for me. Like Howard said, I know a few people that had stopped going a few seasons ago. And this has only kind of just, you know, increased since then. We've had, I think there was one season of a price freeze over kind of COVID, because it was behind closed doors, so they couldn't charge you more anyway. But a lot of clubs actually did freezes around the COVID season, so afterwards in like 21-22. City didn't, I think, immediately after the first season. So then in 22-23. But I mean, what more is there to say that I haven't said before, Howard's just said? I think the newer things for me are, I found some of the replies from some City fans to myself and to other people who've been complaining about it. I found it really disheartening, actually, people kind of coming at you and being like, you're being ungrateful. I don't understand why you're unhappy to pay this much to watch this team. It's like, it's irrelevant, lads. Like, do you not think you might feel differently when Pep goes and we're not as good anymore? Like, the season prize ticket's not going to go down. I think for me, the most annoying thing is just like, bigger picture, it is such a small amount of money overall for City's bottom line. So, you know, in the season when the club takes great pride in parroting how proud it is of its record revenues, its record profits, you know, City made over £80 million of profit last season, that essentially they're squeezing an extra, you know, kind of £30 to £60 out of each individual fan every year. So I think City Tactics on Twitter broke it down. If every season ticket increases by £50, that will generate circa £1.8 million in additional revenue, which equates to 0.25% of City's overall revenue for that season. Jesus. So that gives you an idea of, you know, that is a huge difference to fans in terms of what they can pay and, you know, stretching year on year. But to City, it makes almost no difference. Now, the other problem with that is, look at Pep, you know, coming out and complaining about home atmospheres and saying we need the fans. Well, you know, if City's number of season ticket holders drops, if a lot of the kind of core fan base don't go to games, I guarantee you our results at home will get worse. Guaranteed. Part of the kind of advantage of having home games, and we've seen it a lot this season, really, actually, is having a bit of a bear pit and being able to create that atmosphere. Now, that doesn't mean I don't think we would be able to for certain games, but it will obviously just gradually get worse. And again, Mike number 5 on Twitter tweeted, and I thought it was great. He said City season ticket policy, and with a definition of like creeping normality, a process by which major change can be accepted as normal and acceptable if it happens gradually through small and often unnoticeable increments of change. Mm. That is their policy when it comes to season
boiling
and
frog.
That's why.
That's why
I disagree.
Landscape
with
amnesia, I think it's called as well. Yeah,
that's why I disagree with people saying, "Oh, it's only it's only, you know, 30 quid this year. But yeah, but mate, it was 30 quid last year, 30 quid the previous year, 30 quid the year before that, then the year before that. It's all about the compounding. So yeah, I mean, it's depressing. I will keep my season ticket because, like Howard, it's very important to my kind of, I don't know, social kind of calendar.
And won't get it back either. And they're not available, are they? So
yeah, if you let it go, it's gone. And you know, I'll continue to resell it like I do to fans for face value, rather than give City the ability to make a profit out of resale, which is another absolute kind of fallacy. But yeah, I mean, I could go on for hours like Howard did, but it's a fucking joke.
Just that thing on Pep, Dom Fowle said on WhatsApp. Sure, it won't matter because it was in a press conference. He asked Pep once about the prices. Pep said, "I'm not a CEO." Well, if you're not prepared to, if Pep's not prepared to talk about it, then don't ever stand up and criticise the fans or ask for more during a match.
Agreed.
You know, when they're being displaced for other fans, you know, I'm not that one. Like, oh, this is full of tourists. You know, it is what it is. Everyone's got a right. And I see it on Champions League nights. It is full of people videoing matches and walking around like a theme park. But hey, they're replacing the seats of older fans who aren't going, who have already stopped doing the Champions League. I've no problem with who's in the ground, but just don't moan if the atmosphere changes. And don't, you know, we as fans who, you know, have been going since the 80s, don't have to just sit here and take it. But sadly, I don't think we're organised enough to do anything about it. Imagine if we did actually do up, you know, we mock other fans, foreign fans, were putting, you know, like banners up at matches, complaining about stuff, especially German fans. But imagine if we did actually have it live against Arsenal, a huge banner, slagging off the club and calling them a disgrace. I'd absolutely love that because they deserve it because they've treated us like consumers and not like fans.
Okay, that's a good place to end it. And well said, both of you. Okay, let's change subjects to international football. And before we get to England-Brazil, there was a big international game last night. A plucky little nation by the name of Wales.
Finland.
thrashed the Finns. Absolutely stuffed them. And now face a playoff, basically a one-off game to reach the Euros against Poland on Tuesday night. Howard, how important is it for you as a non-Welshman, a non-Scotsman, but an Englishman, a proud Brit, to see three British nations at the Euros this summer? How much would you like to see Wales there?
Yeah, well, absolutely, yeah. I'd like to see Scotland there. I'd like to see Northern Ireland there. I'd like to see the Ireland's standard of play, and it's not been very entertaining. But much more fun to see, interesting to see Wales, Scotland there. Whether you want them to win, lose or draw, then someone like Slovenia or Slovakia or whatever, of course. It just makes it a more interesting tournament for me. Can I just say what a breath of fresh air it was to watch it on? Is it S4C last night?
Yes.
In Welsh. No Andy Hinchcliffe criticising every move. Just no idea what was being said.
Yep.
At half time, they were doing like, you know, by pitch sign and they're going, and they just suddenly went, top bins. And they just went back to Welsh. And just occasionally, momentum. Transition kept coming in amongst the Welsh. Just like, I love it when you're listening to a different language. And the odd, and then just the top bins just like, I looked up at the screen, like, sorry, what was that? Talking about the free kick, I assume. So yeah. It was great. Just listen, it was like it sounded passionate from the commentators, even though I didn't know what they were saying, and I didn't have to listen to the likes of Andy Hinchcliffe or Robbie Savage or Steve McManaman. So, yeah, I would absolutely love it for them to get there because it would just make it for a better tournament, basically. And I don't, you know, either Scotland as well. It's like a rivalry and all that, but I don't have that. I'd rather they were there. It would just be a better tournament.
I'd cheer them on. I'd cheer England on. I'd cheer all the home nations on. It's obviously, unless they're playing Wales.
Why are they at home, by the way? Have they managed to...
By the results they've had in the Nations League.
Right, okay.
So it's one of those kind of things where that's been put in place for a while. You know, but if you've got the playoffs...
And it'd be the third time in a row that they'll have qualified, will it not, if they get through?
It will, but I mean, Poland, isn't it? You know, they're a tricky, tricky team, so let's wait.
But not as good as they were, but yeah, it will be a tricky one, yeah.
Yeah. How old's Lewandowski now? He must be 34, 35, mustn't he?
Yeah.
Older, maybe. Anyway.
He's not what he was he?
But no.
He's still capable of it. He's 35, so.
35. You still wouldn't fancy him, you know, kind of 10 yards out. You know what I mean? He's gonna
exactly, yeah.
Yeah. Lloyd, as an adopted Welshman, how proud were you last night of your home nation?
Yeah, well, most of my immediate family actually support Wales in footy. My old man switched, he's a glory hunter during the Bale days.
Yes.
He switched back to Wales and he hasn't changed, which I'm not sure you're allowed to do, but there we go. Hopefully he's always listening
welcome.
To this.
People are always welcome back into the fold.
Okay, well, that's,
as long as he's not played for the senior team, he's all right.
Yes.
Yeah, one cap's okay, but two, that's too much.
Yeah,
no, obviously happy. And I think mainly because now, you know, the Wales team is obviously regenerating post Bale, and, you know, Ramsey's kind of on his way out. So it's full of young players, and those guys stepped up last night, which is great. Harry Wilson continues to be a kind of key player for Wales on the international scene. And yeah, I would obviously much prefer them to make it over Poland, although my missus' family are from Poland, so slight contention there. But to have a one-off game, given how the beginning parts of the group stage went, is I think, you know, you'd have probably taken that, wouldn't you?
Absolutely, that's a good point. I mean, it was a really slow start, and of course Page was, his job was on the line, and still kind of felt a bit on the line last night as well, weirdly, if we'd lost. So yeah, let's just fingers crossed for Tuesday night. And even there's just more interest, more home nations in a major tournament. There's more interest as well. So even that, you know, should be enough for any Englishman listening in to just cheer on the Welsh. Go on, you can do it. Don't be anti-Welsh. We love you, really.
When the Euros comes around, you think, oh, I'll watch every match. You know, but then when it actually comes around and it's like, I don't know, early afternoon match and it's Poland against Slovakia or something, it's like, what's the point? You've got to have a vested interest in, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
It'd be much better to have teams near you. Yeah,
you do see
those,
it, don't
rivalries.
You? When you see those kind of fixtures released and you're looking at kind of three games a day, and then you think, oof, it's usually a Friday. I don't know why, but it's always a Friday. We go, that is a great one. I'm just going to watch football all day. But there's always that 4 o'clock Slovakia, Slovenia, and then you go, I'll probably give that one.
And you'll still watch it.
Just kind of in the background as you're doing other stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, England, Brazil, and of course it's England, Belgium on Tuesday, but let's just kind of stick with this weekend first. Kane's out, Saka has pulled out the England squad. I believe there's some poor schmuck who works for Betfair who wrote an article yesterday all about Saka and Kane and how they're the biggest threats against Brazil, and properly broke it down as to why that is so. That would be me. Anyway, that's international football. It happens every bloody time. Lloyd, are you expecting Southgate to go as strong as he can this Saturday evening and then possibly experiment the Belgium? I mean, obviously, he's going to have to bring in, let's say, Watkins for Kane. We're going to get to actually who's going to replace Saka imminently. But those two aside, do you think it's going to be a strong team this Saturday?
Yeah, I think if he's going to go as strong as possible, I think it's more likely to be this game than the one on Tuesday. Yeah. I think he'll obviously be mindful slightly of the fact that, you know, there are some big Premier League games, first game back. But equally, you know, as an international coach, he'll also be wanting to put his best foot forward because, you know, this is the last kind of break before they would go on a camp, essentially. So yeah, I would expect him to basically play what he believes is his best 11 with the players available. Now, like you said, I think there's a couple of other absentees as well as Saka and Kane. So I think isn't Henderson the main man? Isn't he also not training, I think?
He's doing gym. Yeah, well, actually he's doing gym work away from the rest, but so was Saka and Kane. So yeah.
And I saw Cole Palmer as well, hasn't been training outside. So, you know, I think Saka and Kane have basically been ruled out, haven't they? Saka's even left the England camp. I mean, hope to God Henderson's not fit, because the fact that he's even in the squad is just a continued joke. I listened to the kind of Totally Football European show the other week, and they were talking about how kind of Henderson had been perceived at Ajax, how it started versus how it is now. It's quite funny. I would recommend people to go and listen. Essentially, they sold the most shirts they've ever sold for any player when he signed, and there was quite a lot of hype. And, you know, everyone was really excited about the Henderson signing. And then, you know, I think it's 8 games in now. They've won one, lost and drawn the rest. And they've really fallen, I don't know if you could say out of love, because I'm not sure they were ever in love with him. But they realise he does a lot of pointing and a lot of running around and not much passing.
He's their Steve McManaman signing, isn't he? That's for City, yeah.
And I think the other thing is that I can't remember who was saying it on the podcast, was that Dutch football fans kind of, they hold something a bit, they put more importance in slightly different elements to your average kind of English football fan, I would say, in that, you know, they want a bit more guile, arrogance, ability on the ball. Well, unfortunately, lads, Hendo doesn't really have those elements to his game. So, yeah, I think if Southgate is going to pick a team, I mean, I think it's probably going to look something like Ollie Watkins up front instead of Harry Kane. Mm-hmm. I imagine Phil comes in on the right wing instead of Saka.
Yeah.
Probably Rashford plays on the left wing, but you could go for maybe give a debut to Anthony Gordon. But I thought it would be Rashford from a seniority perspective. And maybe it would have been Phil on the left with Palmer on the right, but it sounds like Palmer might not be fit. And then I think midfield will be Rice, Bellingham, and then probably Conor Gallagher if Henderson's not available. And
do you know what's interesting though, Lloyd? Just to stick with the midfield for a second. Mm. There's not many in there, is there? So if Henderson, even if he is still available, he's not 100% fit. We know that. So Maynou could well feature against Belgium by the looks.
Well, hopefully. I mean, I personally think Maynou should probably be starting for England at the Euros. And I know that that has upset a few people, including Asan.
onto WhatsApp we go.
We've discussed it on WhatsApp. But I will explain why when we get to the Maynou bit.
Yes.
But England's options are very short in midfield, as you can just see by looking at the squad that was released. No Calvin Phillips left a big hole in that midfield. I think probably Gallagher, and then back four will be Maguire and Stones, probably Walker, and then I don't know who'll play left back, because that's a bit of a problem position for England, isn't it?
I think Chilwell, if he's fit enough, and he should be fit enough, he's training, so I think Chilwell, and he's played a few games recently, he looks like, hopefully, he's getting over his injury problems, but you just never know with Chilwell, any second he can strike again. He seems to be cursed, that lad. I'm fully with you on all of them, Pickford in goal. I think that very likely will be the lineup tonight, with Rashford on the left, Foden on the right, which is good, Howard, to have Foden at least on the right rather than the left. A bit of a stronger position for him. Any disagreements there, Howard? Do you think there might be? I mean, if Cole Palmer was fit enough to play, will he?
I don't know. I know a lot of other managers have talked about international matches. The clubs have been in touch going, don't play so-and-so too much, don't play. So whilst in theory, I think he would have been originally before dropouts and injuries, and looking to play strongest 11 in one of these two games, definitely, probably, because this one comes first, the Brazil one. I still say it would be hard to call how he's going to use his squad over the two games. So I think Cole Palmer's got a shout, but it's all about positions. The point about Kobbie Mainoo, and yes, I would say the hype's real, but it's also over the top. The point is, he could feature for England going forward very quickly because of where he plays, not because he's better than every other English player that's ever broken through. And that's key to us having these discussions. You know, where do you put Cole Palmer in? So he's probably earned the right for some England time over the next two games, definitely. But like Conor Gallagher, who I just never thought would quite be good enough, has had a breakthrough season. In my head, he's had a breakthrough season for Chelsea. He's been one of their best players in a disappointing season for them. And there's quite a few players like that who have probably earned the right for some game time over the next couple of games. I think Gordon, probably, I don't think Southgate will think he's quite there yet to get to ever be considered in a starting 11, but good enough for the squad. So, look, I'd love to see Phil Foden in the middle for an England game against Brazil, but we're just not going to see it, are we?
I think certainly jumping ahead to Tuesday, you're looking at maybe Jared Bowen on the right and Anthony Gordon on the left, with Kane starting if he's past fit. As regards to Maynou, and I'll throw Branthwaite in there as well, England have been exceedingly lucky because these are exactly the two types of players that you were short of. And suddenly, from nowhere this season, they've just emerged, almost fully formed. I mean, you look at Branthwaite, and we've been talking on the pod in the past about, you know, whether he's City calibre and whether we should go after him in the future. Look at Maynou, and okay, there's disagreements as regards to how big the hype is or is warranted, but you know, there's no question that he is Premier League standard. Already he showed that, and he's exactly the kind of midfielder that England were lacking. So I've got to say, and I'm not saying of any bitterness being a Welshman, those two players, it's almost like you've done them in a lab, because they're exactly the kind of players that you were short of. So that's a positive for England. Let's stay with Maynou then. We've said that there's been some disagreements between Lloyd and Asan.
Rubs hands together.
He is. Okay, Lloyd, I've got to come to you then. Is he the real deal?
Right, look, I'm taking no pleasure in saying this, because he obviously plays for United. And although I have heard from a couple of very well-sourced people that he was very close to moving to City in the summer.
City wanted him for a long time, so that tells you all you need to know.
Yeah. So I just think, for me, it's all about context, right? So I would say England's weakest position in their starting 11 is the third midfielder. Now, if it was up to me, I would obviously play Foden in midfield with Bellingham. I think they could do it alongside Rice in pretty much most games, and I think Southgate's a massive pussy. Now, that aside, he's not going to do that. So as much as we can get annoyed about that as City fans, and it is really annoying that Phil's probably going to play in his worst position, which is left wing, it's just the reality, right? So just get everyone grow up and get over it slightly. With that in mind, what England really do need, if they're going to play Bellingham in that slightly more advanced midfield role, is they need someone that can kind of connect the dots between Rice and Bellingham. And Maynou's profile as a guy that can carry the ball, is a really good passer, and is great in tight spaces, that is perfect for what England need. Now, I appreciate there's been a lot of hype from the kind of United-driven media, and you know, he's only 18, and you do see players break through and play heavily in their first season and then kind of fade away. But all that aside, I've watched quite a lot of the games this season, and he is brilliant, I think. I mean, against Liverpool in the first half, I thought he was the best player on the pitch. And he's shown lots in flashes for United this season, who are a fucking terrible team, and they're terribly coached, and I think he's made a big difference to them this season. So the reason why I think he should start is that there really isn't anyone better. So for me, I very much am aboard the train of him being not just in the squad, but probably in the starting 11 come May, June.
Okay, fair enough.
I won't go that far.
Well, very quickly, I'll come to you on this, Howard, because I want to talk about squad omissions ahead of Euros. But very quickly, what's your thoughts on Maynou?
No, sadly. I mean, I watch United nowadays, so I have a laugh. So I'm not going to pretend I've been watched every minute of their matches and really looked at Maynou. But he looks the real deal at this early stage. That don't mean he's be straight into the England side. But there is that context that, yeah, we've already mentioned, Lloyd's mentioned, it's where he plays and his skill set. I'm not saying he's better than everyone else. I'm just saying, well, actually, he's got a handy skill set that England need. And when I look at the 11, so I'll try to work out the strong 11. If everyone's fit, I think nine of the positions are pretty much nailed down for me.
So
it's Pickford, unfortunately. It's Walker. It's Stones, Maguire, unfortunately, but it's going to happen. He's playing, Maguire.
Yeah.
Shaw's the best left back for me if he's fit and in form, but that's the ifs doing a hell of a lot of heavy lifting there. And then players that must play. I mean, Rice, Foden, Bellingham, Saka, Kane. What does that leave? It only leaves, is that one spot I've lost?
Because we haven't even talked about Grealish. I mean, do you think...
You've got some very good backups. Look, someone's going to be injured over the summer and there'll be tactical flexibility and substitutions. It's a squad game. But I think, you know, when you drill down on paper, I think a lot of the side does pick itself for like starting matches if available. But yeah, and there's plenty of good backup, especially in forward positions. So it only leaves that one little position that, yeah, I don't know about Gallagher in a way. It's like, does he don't fit the role, perhaps Lloyd, that Maynard's got a different skill set.
Gallagher,
just forgetting how good they are, would Maynard be a better fit skill set wise than say someone like Gallagher to fit?
Yes,
that? I would think so.
100%. Gallagher's skill set is to press and is to kind of be the foremost midfielder in a two or three man midfield. And if you're going to have Bellingham there, he's not really a kind of progressive passer or someone that kind of can dribble with a ball. So no, Maynard's a better fit, I think.
Gallagher has just got a red card at a major tournament written all over him as well. That should not be forgotten. Okay, let's look at players who are going to miss out then, specifically from this squad. Who are the ones who you can just imagine basically having that chat with Southgate and, you know, missing out on the plane? I mean, Joe Gomez is an obvious shout. Konsa.
I don't know, you know. I think Gomez will make the final squad. I'll tell you why.
Versatility.
Yeah, I think one of Shaw or Chilwell will not be fit. Because that's just how these things go. So Gomez has played everywhere this season. He's played left back. I thought he was really good in the City game, to be honest. I appreciate he's not a sexy player, but I think he will make the squad because one of those two won't be fit.
Yeah, I think, well, possibly. I mean, it's a 23-man squad, which is the smallest squad of any major tournament in at least 20 years. So if you look at the defence, midfield and forwards, one in each of those positions will be a versatility player. So it would be Gomez. That's very possible.
Reece James will probably be injured as well.
Yes, yeah. And the centre-backs, we haven't got time to go into this.
I think Dunk will drop, I don't know.
Do you think? I mean, Dunk's the most in-form defender in the Premier League this season, or in the last kind of two or three months. And he's a threat from set pieces, Dunk, as well. You win major tournaments on set pieces.
I can't see him starting in I just can't see him in England side being picked by himself. Okay. Maybe Konsa, I don't know.
Konsa is the one I feel that way about. Because he repeatedly gets good for squads, but he's never played a single minute in an England shirt yet. So Southgate always means to have a look at him and doesn't commit. So, and you've got, I can never say his name properly, Gurhi.
Lloyd. Over Mark to the Gahey. Pronunciation, please. Yeah,
is it Gahey? Sorry.
Mark Gahey, yeah. Well, he is Southgate's next cab off the rank. He's got the most caps, the most minutes. He's played in the difficult away games in the group stage when Stones wasn't available. So he's the third centre back. I think at the moment Dunk's probably the fourth, and then depends on how kind of Brantford goes in this set of games against alongside kind of Konsa or whoever else.
Yeah, and it's Tomori as well, who's ripping things up at AC Milan, but he just doesn't seem to get a fair shake with England, so I think he's had
injuries, I'm not sure, a few. It's like Maguire is so solid now because some of the ones breaking through, maybe it's a bit early for them. It's just a bit early for Branthwaite, for example. And I think there's been injuries to other ones that break through, that the competition's not quite there for him. And even if there was Southgate, we'll still pick Maguire. So,
here's the interesting one. I don't want just a one-word answer, but I do want, you know, like a 10-second answer, very short, kind of, because it is a coin flip, this. Harry Kane's understudy. I'll start with you, Lloyd. Is it going to be Tony or Watkins?
Watkins. Has to be Watkins. Much better overall player.
Okay. Howard?
has to be Watkins. Had an absolutely superb season. And, well, Tony's not had the opportunity to have an absolutely superb season. Mm. But yeah. Watkins has earned it. Should be him.
Okay, let's turn our attentions to Brazil, who are winless in four. And Howard, their fans aren't really taking it very well.
I thought we'd do an Oppo fan for this Friday show. Didn't go very well. So I spoke to Evans and Mr. Man City Brazil. He's very busy this week at work. I'm sure Rafael Hernandez, who's some listeners will know, he always says his thoughts on Twitter, so he won't mind me saying this. I thought, do you want to come on and talk Brazil? But he said it would be too painful to talk about them. The corruption at the FA, the call-ups are influenced by agents. It was ever thus. And he despises half the starters. Ha ha. so he's so down on Brazil right now. He didn't even want to come and have a 20-minute rant with me about them. So, yeah, that's where we're at. So,
well,
yeah, it's a strange... I mean, just... They went out to... Was it Croatia they went out to in Qatar in the quarterfinals? So. They went out in the quarterfinals, didn't they? And it's been a
Croatia.
Pretty terrible 15 months or 18 months since, basically. Gone through managers, winless. I think the World Cup slot's safe, but qualifying, they've done bad for that. They're way well down the table. You look at the squad, and it's stacked. It's stacked with Premier League players. Sure, we'll get to that in midfield. It's stacked up front wide anyway, and it looks a good squad. But they've had I mean, that thing about age that stuck with me. I looked up Joe. Yeah, City's Joe, of course, and he got 20 caps for Brazil somehow. And you've always looked at Brazil lineups in the past and think, how on earth's that player, considering the talent they've got, how on earth's he playing for the side? And some of the selections have been weird. And yeah, behind the scenes, there's been a lot of at the FA boardroom level. They tried to get Ancelotti, did not. Then the guy at the top went, and Ancelotti re-signed with Madrid, and it's all been a mess off the pitch, and it's been a mess on the pitch. But look at that squad, and they're still capable of coming back. And as a friendly against England, I'm sure they'll play with some swagger and without the pressure. It should be a big challenge.
I mean, the new manager coming, Dorival Junior. Seasoned, very well-travelled manager. One of those managers where you look at his kind of CV, it pretty much takes in every single country. This is his first time managing the national side, but he's certainly saying the right things. He's hitting the right notes. He's saying that, you know, Brazil has an obligation to win again. And the key thing now is to look for solutions. And it's got a feel of a fresh start to it. Whether that transpires, you know, we'll know more at the weekend. But the midfield, Lloyd, it's so interesting. It's five of the eight are playing the Premier League. You've got João Gomes at Wolves. You've got Paqueta at West Ham. Douglas Luiz at Villa. Casemiro, although he's had to drop out injured. Bruno at Newcastle. Pereira at Fulham. These are beatable, aren't they?
It's not like the Brazil teams of the past, I don't think. You know, there are some good players in there. I think Bruno Guimarães is brilliant. Paquetá's great, but he's not involved. But to give a little bit of credit, a lot of their best players are not available. So, Militão is out. Alisson is out. Paquetá's out because of the betting scandal. Neymar did his ACL.
Edison.
Edison's not involved. Yeah. doesn't start though, usually for Brazil. It's usually Alisson, to be fair.
Martinelli's out as well.
Martinelli's out. Yeah, they've got a few injuries, but I think the main thing is I looked at what their back four is likely to be, and I was like, yeah, I don't really know many of those. I only know Wendell, the left back. So I think actually feels like times have flipped. You look at the England squad or the England 11, you look at the Brazil likely team. Even if I think Brazil had a fully fit team, I think you'd go for the England team quite comfortably.
Well, on that note then, score prediction, sir?
I'm going to go 3-1 England.
Right, okay. I'm going to go 2-1 England. Howard?
Yeah, well, this could be, and Lloyd's going, so you'd want them to put on a show for him at least. This could be an opportunity in a friendly for both. Both teams to go for it, but you know, Southgate's planning for his summer, he'll be really cautious in it. But no, I fancy a 3-1 to England as well. It should be a cracking game, to be honest.
Are we past the point now where we can swear, by the way?
Well, I did it 10 minutes, about 7 minutes in over season ticket prices.
Oh, okay. Well, because Southgate really is a fucking drip, isn't he? I mean, you have got an absolute fucking drip as your manager. You've got the most exciting bunch of players in a generation. For, in my mind, these, you know, exceed the so-called golden generation, and you have got an absolute drip as your manager. I mean, oh my God.
Well, just because you've got some bald, hard man as your manager.
Bouncer. Yeah.
Rob Bailey's anyway. Not much better, yeah. To be fair.
Not tonight, lads.
Yeah, fair point. Well taken. So, on the point of Southgate, then. Lloyd,
please.
Yeah, I definitely want both of you on this. Lloyd, Southgate 2, Manchester United. Thoughts?
Give me more. It would be great. Look, the way that the kind of landscape of football now is, I think it's so different managing a national team to managing a club team. I think the skill set is different. I think, obviously, your ability to kind of analyse players is done a completely different way. I think tactically, you've got to be way more developed and nuanced at club level than at international level. And I think you see actually now in kind of the big international tournaments when they come around, the standard of football is almost always better in the Champions League than it is kind of at international level. So I don't know how well equipped Southgate is to go and do a club job, particularly not as big as United. I think for me, that feels like too big of a job for him. I feel like it could swallow him up a bit like the United job did with David Moyes. So obviously, all that said, I'm all here for it, and I will be outside Old Trafford with the Brexit Jim Southgate flags.
Howard, I don't want to jinx it, and I don't want to kind of, you know, I don't want this to be kind of, you know, picked up by some United fan in 2 or 3 years and played on Twitter and all the rest of it. I can't see a situation where Gareth Southgate is a success at Manchester United. I just can't envisage that.
Well, first of all, the rumours are stronger than I expected. You know, first time I saw it, went, yeah, whatever. And I still feel it might just be agent wrangling or I don't know, just people causing mischief. But it feels as though that he is generally on the shortlist for United. I can see some logic, like a Pellegrini holistic option, to a bridge basically to a brighter future. Yeah, he's cautious, he's functional, he'll get them away from the incompetence in a way. But I mean, come on, this is Man U, Steve. This is Man United. The fear, and it's not really fear, is it? But what I always say this season after season on this podcast, eventually United will get it right. Too big, too powerful, too much money, eventually they will be a threat and they will be competing for major trophies again. And they will get it right. And to that can't be... imagine any other big club in the world would be interested in Gareth Southgate. No, of course they wouldn't. He wouldn't be in the top 20 of their options. And he wouldn't be a disaster results-wise, I think. But the fear is that they, always that they go and get one of the top tier managers. That they still have that pull that they get someone and you think, oh God, they're going to be a threat now because they've got someone. Well, obviously, Gareth Southgate's not that person. He will make them functional. He'll make them, I think results would be okay. I don't think it'd be a disaster in that respect. He'd be better than someone like David Moyes coming in, like a competition winner who feels honoured to do it. But we'll see in the summer if he's actually progressed at all. Whenever England got a big lead in a game, they cacked the pants, basically, didn't they? And he's just so negative. As a United fan, you wouldn't want it because you wouldn't, I don't think the style of play would be to their liking. And no, I just, honestly, it's too good to believe, to be honest. I'm not even getting excited at the prospect. So I cannot believe this is actually going to happen.
Well,
because they have still got a pull. I know they have got a pull and the funds will be there.
Well, Berardi went there, so that tells you kind yeah. of everything in that sense.
Yeah, they are.
So they've got that pull, and even someone like De Zerbi would get me more worried, because I can see he's got philosophy and style. You could think if he gets it right, then there'll be a force. But an up and coming manager like that would make me much more fearfully United than someone like Southgate, who's just come on. I mean, if it happens, honestly, we're all going to town. So
yeah. He irons his socks, let's be honest. He irons his socks.
And his bed sheets, I bet.
Yeah, yeah. Staying with Manchester United, and in the WSL this weekend, there is a Manchester derby. City are doing really well. They've really surprised me this season. I don't know where it's come from, to be honest. I don't follow it closely enough to know why. All I know is I've been very pleasantly surprised at the fact that they're now level on points with Chelsea and really going for the title. A goal for Bunny Shaw will see her become City women's record ever goal scorer. Will you be watching this, Lloyd? Will you be following it?
I will. Yeah. So City's women's team are on a 10 game winning streak coming into this game, which is pretty impressive, reminiscent of the men's team in recent kind of title run-ins. Obviously, they kind of collapsed in the same place in 22-23. So hopefully we slap United on the weekend. Our record's generally been pretty good as well in derbies. I mean, we went there earlier in the season. I think it was 3-0, wasn't it?
Yeah, 3-1, I think. I might be wrong, 3-1, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, because the men's and women's team matched each other with goals at that point in the season in the derby. So, yeah, I'll be watching. It has been weird, I think, around the women's team, in that, we started off with signing a lot of the stellar England players. And
yes,
over the last few years, it feels like, hasn't been reported, but there's been this slight kind of stink in that a lot of City's best English female players have decided to leave and to go abroad. So I was kind of heartened to see the news that it sounds like Lauren Hemp's going to extend and re-sign this week, because she'd been touted on a move abroad along with Chloe Kelly. So let's see. I believe Gareth Taylor re-signed a new deal, didn't he, as well, a few weeks ago to extend as manager. So.
Mm. Yeah, it's looking very positive. I mean, also, a victory of United this weekend will really dent their Champions League aspirations, which is always a good thing. Will you be watching it, Howard? Are you kind of going to be watching it on telly? It's at the Etihad as well, isn't it? It's not at the Mini Etihad. So,
it's 12:30, and then it's just a crowd. I mean, during the day. So.
Ticket prices are quite reasonable, I hear, as well, which is nice for them.
Nice to hear the club's been listening to feedback. I mean, obviously, the men's team take up all my stress and attention, and, obviously the women's game has grown and the quality's getting better, and it's what Lloyd would call a must-win game, because Chelsea have beaten Arsenal recently.
Yeah.
And they're just not going to drop points, are they? So the goal difference is two worse, same points. So they need to keep winning. They really do need to win every game. It's a big game. And obviously they're going to it favourites. And I'm surprised, with that, the drain of talent that they have lost in recent years of players. And Gareth Taylor, never really sure if he was doing a great job or not. But to be there in this title race now, he's done an excellent job, and there should be a cracking game, and they should win as the better side. But it is a derby, of course. So, I will be. Obviously, the first thought was, I wonder if it clashes with the Premier League game. Then I realised it's the international break. So it's really good timing for the game as well, because I think the women's game is obviously a poor relative a lot of the time, with some of the timings of games that clashes with men's games. And to give it breathing space for this game as well is good. It's good for the game, and it's good for the women's game as a whole. So, I'll be checking it out.
I'll be watching it with my daughter, so I am really looking forward to it. And by the way, she's only two, and my mind's gone. Who do we play last? Who does City play last?
What do you mean? The men?
The men, sorry. Who was our last game?
Newcastle.
Newcastle. Of course it was.
I had to think about that. Yeah.
I know, my mind went there. I was short of Newcastle. Well, I couldn't picture it. So I was watching Newcastle and with my daughter, but she's playing with her toys. She said, goal! And we scored about 10 seconds later. Freaked me right out. I know.
Were you watching the stream or?
No.
All right.
She tried it in the second half and it didn't work, the one trick pony. But still, it freaked me right out. Honestly, she properly celebrated. I said, what are you on about? We've scored. Weird. After the international break, we're at the business end of this season. And I was going to ask you about, your predictions for the top and bottom. But I think that's best left to next week as we go back into Premier League football.
Especially as how many other teams will have point deductions by next week.
Well, quite. Right. Yeah.
Might have to wait to the end of the summer to actually know who's gone down. So.
And of course, there'll be injuries as well to players over the international break. And so I want to
just say, though, I'm absolutely sick of all these other teams cheating in the Premier League.
I know.
Yeah. They're really affecting the integrity of the Premier League and the brand.
Howard, so. I just want a level playing field. Yeah. Just a level playing field.
I'm actually embarrassed for them.
No one's asking the question. Yeah. What about City?
Yeah.
When are they going to be charged?
They were charged first, weren't they? What I really want to come to is the fact that we've had a number of Brazilian players who have played for City down the years. I've kind of narrowed down, let me just count this quickly, 10, I think. So I've narrowed it down to 10, right? And we need to pick a top five in order from these 10. Now, these 10 are Jan Couto, who is playing very likely at fullback this weekend, Joe, Fernandinho, Jesus, Ederson, Robinho, Alano, Danilo, who could well actually be playing at the weekend as well, Giovanni, and Fernando. So.
Oh, poor Glauber Bertie, eh?
Yeah, but
it was 6 minutes against Bolton, coming off the Bertie bench.
I wasn't even joking when I replied to you on email when you said, what about him? You would have definitely squeezed him in there, ironically, I just know it. So
third, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Right, let's go for the best of the bunch, and then we can settle on one and then we can move our way up. So the absolute best of that bunch there, for me, would be Fernandinho. Lloyd?
I would also like to say, let's, in the news of this week, probably cancel Robinho.
Quite. Well, he was getting in. There's no way he's getting in, but as in terms of his status.
Fuck him.
yes.
I think the right answer is Ferner, but I think if Ederson were to stay, say, 5 more years, then I think Ederson would have a very strong case to rival Fernandinho.
Okay.
But right now, I think it's Fernandinho.
Is it fair to say then that your first and second spots are taken up, as in Ferner and then Ederson second?
Yes, for me, yeah.
Okay. Howard, your
yep. I mean, it's hard to compare a goalkeeper with a defensive midfielder. And they've both been transformative players in how we play and our success. But I think Ferner's just top for me. I think.
Right.
Because now, there was kind of no flaws with him. So, Ederson does have his moments, but then he's a goalkeeper. So, yeah. Outfield players can get away with moments in a way that goalkeepers can't. And I have criticised Ederson slightly sometimes, and shot stopping and moments of madness. Fernandinho was just all round, and the first, for the precursor to Rodri of a new standard in defensive midfielders, basically.
Do you mind if I pick a couple of players for omission? As in, I can't envisage either of you two or myself going through in the top five. So, Jan Couto, even if I'm saying
he's not played for us, so, yeah.
Yeah, but he's a City player, so he's gone. I'm deleting him. He's gone. Fernando?
102 appearances, but yeah, he...
Get rid.
He was just a product.
Okay.
That was the time I'm happy to forget about.
Yeah.
And he won league cup. Yeah, so his timing as well, it was like, was it the end of Pellegrini's reign and the first bit of Pep, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway, one League Cup is all they got, which 3 years at City in the 2010s. That's quite impressive to pick their least successful period. And maybe there's a reason for that. So
we have got 5 players left and we've got 3 spots left. And it's Jesus, Joe, Alano, Danilo or Giovanni. Giovanni, the famous derby goal, of course. Alano, that incredible free kick against Newcastle. I've got to put Jesus in at third. What about you
two? That's the easiest third ever. So
yep.
Well, there's one that some others will say is a favourite, but no, he has to be third for his service to City and what he did. So,
Lloyd,
yeah, really, I mean, the right answer is Gabby Jesus. I think the edgy answer is probably Alano.
Does that suggest then, because Alano is my fourth choice and number four, are you happy to both have split in fourth?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he was good fun.
He was good fun, Alano, wasn't he?
Yeah. He wasn't there long enough as well either, but he was good fun and he's super skillful. And that Sven year and those years were just, you know, the best, really, weren't they? Just a roller coaster ride, and he was a part of it. So,
here's the interesting one now to finish. There's three players left, and there's one spot left. So, we've got Ferner, we've got Edison, we've got Jesus, we've got Alano. We've got the makings of a decent five-a-side team here. Who completes it? Is it Joe? Is it Danilo? Or is it Giovanni?
It would have been Rubinho, but we've cancelled him, so that's fair enough if you want to.
Yes. If we're actually picking a five-a-side team, I'd go for Danilo, by the way, just get a defender in there. But although Ferner could probably do that, couldn't he?
If we'd had nine Brazilian players ever at City, I'd still put Joe in 10th. So it's got to be Danilo. He was a tidy little under, you know, he did his job.
Do you remember the game, the 2-1 against the Scousers in 2019?
Mm.
The Leroy Sané game?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Danilo started that.
What?
Did he?
Yeah. Go check. He was key in that game. Walker was injured and we played Danilo. And there you go. He played well.
And I mean, he's captain of Juventus right now. He's not a bad player. So
yeah, exactly. He's far above the others. I mean, Giovanni only played 19 games for City, but he did win that derby game. You know, so I'll always have credit for that, of course. So he went on to play for Hull City next. No offense, but you know, Danilo's at a different level as a footballer.
So picture this in as a five-side team. You've got Edison in nets. You've got Danilo kind of in defence. You've got Ferner just absolutely everywhere. And you've got Jesus and Alano conjuring stuff up for that. That's not a bad effect. I'd go and watch that if it was one of those masters competitions like they used to have.
That's pretty good. There's just the problem is the guy up front's not very good at putting in the net. But I guess in five-a-side, even Edison could score quite a lot, couldn't he?
Yeah, Edison probably the top scorer of that too. Yeah.
I'll have Silvino and Maicon putting the cones out for training then.
I nearly included Maicon. Yeah, yeah.
No, he was for us. At his peak, he'd be straight in this side, but for City, obviously not. So.
Oh, when we signed him, I just thought, imagine if it was, you know, like an Indian summer. He was an amazing player. Anyway.
Wasn't it Bale who destroyed him first on his decline?
Yes, it was. It was, yeah. Yeah, and truly as well. That was hard to watch. Right, thank you very much, lads. We've covered a lot of ground. International break, always quite tricky to cover because there's disparate things to do, but you've both been superb Phil Nevilles today, so thank you very much, Howard.
Yeah. Damned with faint praise. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you very much, Lloyd.
Yeah, always available for a utility job.
And thanks everyone for listening in. That's a wrap for today, folks. As always, please check out the 9320 platform for other top pods and spread the word too, because that always helps. In the meantime though, until proper football returns imminently, be well, be safe, and forever up the Blues.